It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
God Journey.
We have moved.
The view from here, I'm going to get inspired.
Don't
this
tell people
great.
About the view. I don't want people to
no,
know.
No. It's the view is kind of cool.
The view is awesome from my office. Absolutely.
We started in your little office in Oxnard, and it didn't have much of a view. And yes, you could see the fence across
the street. You could see the street.
The street
people.
And the fence across.
People
there was no
I love.
People there.
My neighbors. I
no,
love
it was
my neighbors.
A, it was a fence.
Anyway.
And then we moved to Moorfar. And the winds were pretty, whipping.
Nasty.
And now we're here. You're in Newbury Park. You're closer to me. This
I
is great.
I moved close to you, and my wife made me do it, and I'm in the middle
You're
of...
You're 5 minutes away. This is awesome.
I'm in the middle of all this packing and unpacking.
No,
and
I... Yeah, moving
I
is...
that.
Moving is not one of your wonderful experiences.
And even when you get moved, that's not half of it. It's
yeah.
just settling. It's getting everything to work the way it was working before you even... So, anyway...
I must know you, because I've gone through, this is now your third location since I've known you. This is amazing.
Sarah and I are church hoppers, are home hoppers. We can't ever be happy anywhere. We live 3 years next to neighbors, and they want us to go. So we go. No, I'm kidding. I'm going through withdrawal, though. I got to tell you.
Withdrawal of what?
Withdrawal.
Withdrawal of what?
I'm reading a newspaper every morning.
You're not doing that anymore?
I've read a newspaper every morning for probably 45, 47 years.
And you're not doing that right now?
No, when we moved, it's a dying technology.
You're going online for your information now.
I'm getting it on, yes. And it's really awkward. I mean, breakfast cereal was always a newspaper and, Cheerios or whatever. And now I'm going, gee, it's weird. I don't have a paper. But the paper I was getting here's the deal. Here's why it's a dying technology. They were printing less and less and charging more and more.
Yes.
The paper's now down. I get postcards with more information on it than the paper had. And they're firing reporters, and they're AP stories that I read the day before. I noticed on my iPhone, I got the little AP news feed. I'm reading stuff the next morning that I'd already read the previous afternoon, and I finally said, you know what? I really don't need a paper. I really,
really?
Don't.
You've gone paperless.
I'm not sure I'm going to survive this because, it's just weird in the morning. I get up and there's no paper, no comics, I'm not good at getting online and catching up on sports. I just glance through the sports section, but I don't know anything about sports other than I think there's a Super Bowl this weekend. Other than that, I'm kind of uninformed about some of that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I'm taking the big dive. We're just saying, how long can I go without a paper before I finally – am I just a weeping, crying mess at the kitchen table on...
I don't think I've ever seen you as a weeping, crying mess.
I know, so it's... it's not so far so good. I'm not a weepy, crying...
You're not a weepy, crying kind of guy.
I'm not.
You're not. Wow.
But it's amazing.
Well, that's cool.
I don't know how cool it is. Also, in this move, I had my laptop computer fry. So if you wrote me an email last week between Sunday evening and Thursday morning, it is gone.
Yeah, someone sent me an email that says you're pulling a Brad Cummings. You're trying to
I know many people saw intention in it. It was – I had probably 100 and –
Did it fall down the stairs? What happened?
Nothing. I just opened it up one day to transfer the files back into the main computer when I got it set up here.
It fried?
It just was frozen.
Wow.
And then it wouldn't reboot. I tried all kinds of things.
Did you cast out the foul electronic demons?
Finally took it into Apple.
And they said it's done?
The hard drive is fried. I could spend $1,500 if I wanted recovering the data. So I thought to myself, do I want to spend $1,500 to recover 135 emails? That was the only thing on there. I hadn't done any other work that wasn't already on my other computer. I'm thinking, I didn't want to spend much money to have much more.
You got a day and a half of freedom.
So if you've written me, I always respond to emails. So if I didn't respond to you, I didn't get it. You can assume I didn't see it. We got some wonderful podcast emails that I was going to read. But
people graciously don't have that assumption about me.
We don't. Yeah, I know. Honestly, it's something I think I'm going to have to give up because I get so much email now. Just, you know, questions from a book.
I'm only 500 and some behind.
I've always liked answering emails. But
I know. I think it's very commendable. I just can't.
It's either that or that's all I'm going to do is just sit here 16 hours a day and answer emails. And I just
can't. You don't do 16-hour days. It doesn't. You're never happy.
That's why I'm not caught up on the emails. Yeah. I'm not caught up today as we sit here. So anyway, found a great book though I want to recommend.
Lay it on me. I've enjoyed every one that you have.
People have asked us, help us with kids. You know, what do we do with kids? Some of the stuff we shared a couple podcasts ago I think was helpful for people. There's a new book out. And Dave from Arizona recommended this to me, and I went out and got it for Amy for Christmas.
Yeah?
Amy's my granddaughter, for those of you that don't listen to these podcasts. It's called The Jesus Storybook Bible by Sally Lloyd-Jones, and the subtitle is Every Story Whispers His Name. And it's Noah, and it's Daniel, and it's all the stories of the Old Testament into the New Testament and on. And I sat down and read Jonah to my granddaughter the other day. It's at her house. I don't see it all that often, but I was at her house, and we decided she wanted me to read a Bible story. So she brought the book over, and we read Jonah. And it's such a great depiction of Jonah because it really puts grace at the center. It's God saying to Jonah, I want you to go to Nineveh. People are doing things there that I don't like because they don't know who I am. And I want you to go tell them how much I love them. And Jonah's like, no, I want you to kill them. And it just is done so well. So if you've got
a lot of pastors I might want to recommend that to.
If you've got little kids, who want to have it, you say, what do we do with our kids? You could just read them these Bible stories. They're wonderfully done. They're wonderfully illustrated. The Jesus Storybook Bible. I'll put a link on the website to Amazon. Sally Lloyd-Jones is the author. And if
that's awesome.
I couldn't recommend something like this more wholeheartedly. This is just an excellent, excellent read, and I think people really enjoy it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And my daughter loves it, and her children loves it. So there you go. That's the good side of my life. The bad side is?
What?
I'm just...
What?
Angry.
What are you angry about?
I'm angry at the government.
Oh, dude, don't even start there. I've been doing forms like you wouldn't believe.
I don't mean that. I mean the bailout stuff, the new package. It's just totally, it's not bailout stuff. Dude, it's earmarked.
Obama was your dude.
No, he wasn't my dude. my vote for Obama was a protest vote against the Republicans.
It was a protest vote.
It was.
I don't think protest vote worked that way because then you end up getting the guy that you picked.
I have no hope that McCain would have done anything different here. So
okay, all right.
I'm not regretting my vote at this moment, but I am saying that. And then to hear Bank of America, our wonderful friends at Bank of America, who now need $20 billion to help them because they bought Merrill Lynch. Why?
A failing government
going broke.
The
government forced them to buy it. Now
and
they
wouldn't let them back out of it.
And the president of the company spent $1.2 million refurbishing his office right as they were being purchased. The CEO of...
Yes, yeah, it's not a good day to be a CEO of something and
and to redo your office
$400,000
toilet.
You can probably get a plane these days pretty cheap. Everyone's selling them.
You know what's ridiculous to me is just how absolutely nakedly greedy this is. And there's no outrage from the citizenry. It's just, yeah, we'll throw another few billion dollars here, another few billion dollars there. And all these Wall Street guys made their big money.
Everybody's got their hand out going, what's my cut?
Exactly.
That's the problem that there's not a whole bunch of outrage. It's like, look, if you've been working hard. I mean, I do feel a little bit like the older brother in the prodigal deal. It's like, wait a minute. I've been working hard.
This is a good time to be the older brother in the prodigal.
I've been working hard, being responsible, paying my bills. And it just seems like those people, all they do is get a front the whole flip the bill for everyone else that hasn't been responsible. And I'm just going like, okay, I do love the gospel of grace. I really do. But I do hate the way it gets played out in this whole scenario of stuff going like, wait a minute, I think we're engendering an entire mindset of entitlement.
And this is how it changes as far as the government is concerned. Because at the same time they're saying, oh, poor Bank of America, we need to give you some money so you can make it because you've got these bad loans.
Yeah,
they're saying to people who have the bad loans, and I know lots of people in their homes upside down to hundreds of thousands of dollars, You cannot, this is how the law got changed in the last 2-3 years. You cannot walk away from your home if you're upside down on it. You can't just walk away and say, you know what, bank, you can have it back. Because now the bank didn't have this right 3 years ago. Now they have the right to go attach every other asset you have to satisfy the loan on the home. The loan isn't really the collateral anymore. It's all of your personal finances. And so on both ends, the banks are being rewarded by politicians. We'll give you money, and we'll make sure you can suck as much money as you can from these poor people whom you gave bad loans to. We're paying for your bad loans, but you know what? You can still get every dime you can get out of the homeowner.
I think the
unconscionable.
The personal responsibility is, I think, deleted.
Unconscionable.
From the online dictionary.
That's another good reason not to get the paper, because it just, I don't want to face that every freaking morning. I am telling you.
Oh, got a freaking out.
When I look at what the government is doing right now, it is absolutely irresponsible.
It's bailout nation, dude.
This is worse than anything England did when we had a tea party. And I don't know how you get enough people mad enough to do.
This is where everything goes to being nationalized. Socialized.
Everything is.
I'll guarantee you.
And the Republicans started it. That's why I voted for a Democrat.
Whatever. I think it's the government of self-interest.
Yep.
I think the biggest problem we have is self-interest has governed most all the decision-making for decades. And I don't think it's Republican or Democrat.
Nope,
it's power and people's desires. It's the, my precious. It's the one ring of power. It's like, I somehow want my place where I get my cake and eat it too, and I don't want to be responsible for other people, so how do I entrench myself in this role? Who do I need to give favors to? And it just,
and that's the upper 2% of CEOs, politicians who are in bed together, celebrities, out to, I don't know what the word here to use, to ruin, I was going to use an S word, but let me use the word ruin, the 98% of people who go to work every day, pay their bills, try and do what's right, they are getting absolutely roasted by the corrupt government we now live with, and nothing is being done about it.
Yeah, but
nothing.
The reason I don't think
unbelievable.
I know, but the reason I don't think you see a whole lot of revolt is, I'll be honest, I mean, chuck cyberstones at me if you want.
Okay. I've got a few in the closet.
I think the other 98%, I don't know that their heart is that profoundly different. They may not have the means or the ability.
Wow. I see it coming now.
No,
the cyberstones.
They're
coming.
I'm serious. I think the reason there isn't that sense of revolt is the only time there's that outcry is, well, where's my piece? It isn't about you're giving out pieces. It's, where's mine? That's not fair. If they got it, I mean, it's this. I don't see anyone saying, hey, wait a minute, the whole mindset that we're rewarding here is completely bankrupt.
Completely.
And I do think it's that whole mentality, is that entitlement. You're just going like, golly, why don't we go back to being farmers? At least those guys had to realize, you don't work, you don't eat. It's that simple. And good farmers also know, you can work hard, and without the accompanying grace of God that is so much out of your control on stuff, we live in the realm of God's loving benevolence. And you just go like, golly, we've lost touch with all of that. And I think that is tragic.
It's everything you wouldn't tell a young couple to do. If a young couple's financially strapped because their debt is too great, you wouldn't go tell them, you just need to borrow more money. You need to go borrow and spend more money to get yourself out of this. But that's exactly the rationale our Republican leaders used for the last, 8 years, and now the Democrats, after a week, are doing the same thing. We got to throw billions of dollars at stuff that we don't even have. We're borrowing more money to save an economy. And I just...
It does seem on the world scene.
Yeah.
All the other economies are like this, too. They got the same silly stuff.
All fraudulent. This is not...
Every indice out there of some value, some traded reality, has all, over the last couple of decades, inflated to... It's all about perception. It's not about reality.
No, exactly.
It's about perception. So everyone's economy is, guys, we got to continue the charade. We got to keep playing. We got to pretend. Keep spending.
And when you read Revelation, when it talks about in one day, Babylon falls. and all the wealthy and all the kings and all the people that thought. I look at that scripture now and go, my goodness, we could be approaching that day when really all the economies of the Western world collapse under this. Got to throw more money, more debt after bad debt, hopefully trying to save something. You're just looking at all going, wow. This has more.
I'm not thinking that's the solution
of the end of the age than all the other stuff. But hey, we don't want this to be the dour hour.
You're going eschatological on me. Wow.
You know what? The day's coming. This has all been fluffed up, and what you just said is so true. We're going to save ourselves by continuing to fluff up, and even the bill that was just passed yesterday. Is not a stimulus bill. It's just earmarks. We're just throwing a lot of money at anything that wants money right now because the public trough is open. Hey, piggy, come on in and stuff your face. And there's just no end of the piggies that are going to stuff their face. Well, we're paying for that. Our children will pay for that. My grandchildren will pay for what's going on right now.
I was explaining this to my children over dinner.
It's insane.
And my kids, you know, they're looking at all this and they're like, Dad, I don't get this. And it's like, oh, well, bottom line, we're spending your inheritance. Our generation has been bartering and brokering about all these things. Well, no, I mean, his face just fell. And I said, Jonathan, here's the reality. You got to learn how to manage what you've been given and live within those means graciously and thankfully. And if you can find something to put your hand to that is a measure of industry, do so, and do so with wisdom. And if nothing else, that's what they're getting out of this, and I love that.
Yeah, they are. But boy, it is a mess. So let's go on. Better things. Better things.
Oh. Hot off what presses.
Yeah, I pray about all that a lot. I pray about the whole economy and what's going on. I pray for people I know losing jobs. I have emails from folks I know.
I had 100,000 this last week.
Losing jobs, losing homes. I will say this. God is a provider. God will faithfully provide for his children in spite of all this that's going on. At the same time, there's got to be a cry for justice from the populace that says, I mean, write your congressman. I've written mine. I've written my senators. I'm saying, you guys got to stop. Does it matter? I don't know. I'm a voice screaming in the wilderness. But if enough people scream, something has got to change. They could have given all this money to people to buy their loans back down to where they could actually reasonably pay for them.
The figures that they're just our national population. They probably could have given each and every single citizen $230,000 each.
Probably not quite that much, but yeah.
And I just go like, gosh, that would have been more effective.
and to see greed rewarded, to see people who are so anyway, Susie from Texas writes this. First, let me tell you how grateful I am to have been led to your Lifestream Ministries and into the God journey from there. Of course, the timing was perfect, as that's our Father's way. I often have thought about the profound changes that have taken place in my life just on the other side of the click of a mouse. Sometimes the simplest of leadings turn out to be the most profound life changers. I've enjoyed your podcast. I've shared them with our pastor, and he shared them with his friend, another pastor. Well, get that.
Whoa.
I'm glad grace is still contagious. Oh, that's a wonderful thought.
That's a good phrase.
And then she tells a bit about her story and going through some real, you know, started out in some real grace, ended up in some real legalistic leadership kinds of roles. And then she read something recently, heard something recently, described how subtle legalism is. Likened it to a falling asleep on a raft at the beach, only to wake up and discover that you had drifted so far into the ocean that you can't see the shore anymore. That's a good definition of legalism. It really is. Fell asleep on the raft, drifted out so far that I can't see what this is all about anymore, and I'm just trying to survive my little life.
You know, the only thing that doesn't work for me in that?
What's that?
Is I don't think you'd fall asleep into legalism.
I think you spiritually fall asleep.
I don't know. I think there's a seduction of legalism that we're very susceptible to.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why I'm going like it's not. You might be quote asleep at the spiritual wheel, maybe.
Oh, I think.
But I think the soulish dimensions of legalism offers me clarity that God doesn't seem to provide.
Yep.
God seems to be happy with me having to wrestle through relationally with Him, dynamics, of grayness. And it's not everything's relative. It's just that, guess what? Everything isn't just cut and dried. There is an unfoldingness to this dialogue with God that requires an ongoing dependence. I think most people, the reason that legalism often, I'm not so much dependent upon that thing anymore.
That offers the illusion of control.
It does.
If I just do A, B, C, and D, God's got to do E, F, and G. And you never realize that he doesn't. You're doing A, B, C, and D, and God's not doing E, F, and G, but all you can think of is, because I'm not doing enough A, B, C, and Ds, I just got to go back and try harder.
And it also offers that sense of achievement. It's a means by which I can accomplish something and feel good about it.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, I don't think I got there because I took a nap. I think I chose to go swimming out there because it made me feel good in a certain way. I don't think a lot of people ever come to honest grips with that.
No, their role in that?
Yeah.
In embracing it, being seduced by it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we do because I think, like you said, it's pretty seductive. We don't feel like we chose it. We feel like we ended up in it.
Yeah, you do end up later after you've been robbed by it. You do end up, how'd I get here?
This is similar. From Roe in Tennessee, the timing of coming across your podcast has been sweet. My husband and I left our fellowship about 20 years ago and have had some wonderful fellowship over those times. We've walked very closely with a few families and singles for about 15 years. We live very much in relationship with each other without form or structure, and it brought great life. This is falling asleep at the switch maybe right here. But about 5 years ago, we started meeting. Same time, same place, same teacher. You can fill in the rest. Well, about 2 years ago, once again, we found ourselves outside that circle yet again. Isn't that amazing? 15 years of friendship and fellowship. We were talking about this in view of an interview I did yesterday about. We were talking some academics who are doing this survey about trying to figure out how could we create a new academic discipline that is about people living loved by God. And some really pretty amazing institutions behind this trying to see if they can create a new combination of sociology, theology, and 16 other disciplines into something about living loved. So they asked if they could come interview me because some of the things I've written. Interesting interview, but we talked about the wonder of when you find real community, and it's just 15 people, the families and singles, and had great life together, and then they decide they need a little more structure. So we'll meet same time, same place, same teacher. That would be a clue. Woo! And 2 years later, they're outside of it. They no longer fit in it. At first, very painful. I thought we were different. We could do it when no one else could. Ha ha. My daughter's wedding took place in the middle of this, and what a purifying and painful process for her. But oh, how I would not have seen my own heart, where my thankfulness all those years ago of being set free from the religious system turned into arrogance and superior thinking. Mm. How I closed myself off from others in the body, and when I did talk, I thought I had something to give and did not listen or learn from anyone but those I was close to. I feel through this process the Lord had handed my husband and I a pair of binoculars and is sharpening back our focus on him that we had lost. Back 15 years ago, when we wanted freedom for us and for others to experience Jesus and that he would truly be the head and the shepherd of his people. So about this time we read The Shack, He Loves Me, and You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore. And we started listening to the podcasts, new and old. All these things came together to bring in focus what we lost sight of. I am now on such an adventure and seeing and hearing people I would have just walked by. I see the body and experience the blood flowing throughout the body, one to another, not just one direction. I'm living loved and learning how to love those I sit beside at ball games, people I've been around for years and just never engaged. Oh, what I lost. Mm. Isn't that a great discovery?
Yeah. I'm glad it's not, quote, too late.
No, it's never too late to wake up and see some things. But I love when people go through very painful stuff, even body life stuff, even collaborations with people that you love and care about, and then that falls apart. And so many times the reaction is, well, I'm just never going to be my own man, do my own thing, rest of you can get right. I love that she comes through this realizing, hey, I got caught in that stuff with my own spiritual arrogance. I got caught being the one-way giver and not realizing other people see things I don't see and having a humility and a tenderness and an openness. And what I loved about reading this letter was that the transformation that had come was not, hey, we got out of that thing, started a house church, that turned ugly too, so now we're just, forget it all. It was, I want to come back to learning what it is to love people, whoever God puts in front of me today, to live loved and to love. And that's really the heart of what this journey is about. It's not about, a guy wrote me the other day, trying to find the right fellowship. What do I do, and how do I get a link, and do you know anybody in my area? And Oz says, you know what? Just wake up tomorrow and love the people God puts in front of you. Just take an interest in the people that are in front of you. You will find the body of Christ soon enough. It may take a year or two, three or four. You'll find them. You'll find people who live. When you live love, God connects things. And when we're looking for something to fill a void, I just think we keep looking and never find it.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's still I'm trying to do. I think probably the most valuable moments of change that have happened in me is really when I've come to that place of bankruptcy. I ran out of what I could do, and I'm pretty darn capable. That's not a help.
So it takes a lot of stuff to get you to the end of you.
No, but I mean, that's where it's not helpful. And I think, you know, sometimes people don't recognize that. It's like, yeah, to whom much is given, much is required, and it takes much longer.
Put that in there.
I think that the challenge is in those moments, out of your own sort of disillusionment, the pain of that, the personal frustration, you can make the mistake of wanting to chuck the desire that took you on that journey. And the thing I'm realizing is, you know what? God, give me the grace in those moments to hold out for the fact that there is still something that's real. Okay. It's just under a different power, which is like it's not under my power or it's not in my control. But it doesn't mean it's not in His.
Yeah.
That's the thing I'm just going, you know what? We're walking through some really challenging, unfun things. But as you do this, like, you know what? I'm becoming more and more thankful for where the things that my heart is satisfied and appreciative. I'm like, wow, God, I'm not losing sight of the fact that You're the provider of that. And that is real. And it is not the fruit of my filling whatever blank. Mm-hmm. And you're just going like, wow, I love that. Because it's like, I don't mind getting dissed on the other stuff, because I just as soon know if that's not real, it's not real. I don't want to pretend.
Yeah, I think that's the value of living a journey that really says, I want this centered on reality. I don't want to create my own false little environment and make everybody around me prop up my own false little environment. If it's good, and I say this to people all the time about community. I said this to the people yesterday, the academics that were here. When fellowship between left-handed believers, and we talked in that terminology like we have in previous podcasts here, there's nothing better than people who are in a room, who are in relationship. Let's not have to be in a room, just in relationship, who really are living loved by the Father, not grabbing for stuff, not asking people around them to give them everything they want, not having their dependencies put in people, not needing the group to validate them. When they're just living in the freedom of being God's child, community is an awesome and beautiful thing. And the lady looked at me and she said, but it never lasts. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, do you know of where it just has lasted for a long time? And I said, I'm not sure what you're talking about. She said, I knew a group like that. I, as an academic researcher, I found this group that was living like you were talking about, left-handedly, living in the love of God. They didn't have an ornate leadership structure. They were just people loving God together. And she said, they'd gone on for 4 or 5 years and looked really, really good. And she said, I was going to study it. I'd been around it and really personally, spiritually enriched by it. And I thought, I really want to study what makes this work. But she said, before I could get there and start studying it, it blew up. And I said, well, how did it blew up? She said, well, two or three guys decided that they wanted to do what they wanted to do, and it just kind of pulled the group apart.
That's how it always blows up.
For 2,000 years.
Yeah.
It's James and John with Jesus saying,
I want to be right left here.
Can we be first? Can we be closer to you than anybody else? Can our way prevail over their way? And I just looked at her and I said, you know what I think is true? Because here's the risk. And part of what she was saying is, I think that's why you have institutions. So you protect that from happening. And I said, yes, but by the time you get an institution in place, you are no longer having the substantive of the thing you wanted to protect. That you end up undermining the very goal by saying, we'll resolve it institutionally. And she said, well, what else do you do? And my answer to her was, I said, you know what? Here's where I'm living right now. I celebrate whenever God brings people into my life. And that kind of authentic, my relationship with you and Kelly and your family, other people around here that we know, when God brings people in our lives that live that way, we enjoy it. We treasure it. I wouldn't say milk it for all it's worth. That's a little more extreme. We just enjoy the relationship.
Yeah.
If they go bad, and you know what?
They will.
My experience says
they can.
They almost always do. Now, they don't have to. I do have lifetime friendships with people. We've been on this journey. But I think the closer you work together, the closer you tie decision-making in life to other people, then I think the risk is greater.
Yes.
Like we talked about last week, it takes one right-handed person in a room of left-handed people.
Screw it all
that
up.
That destroys everything. Because now you've either got to come like them to repress them, or you just say, you know what, I give up. But I think the idea of not falling into that defense mechanism, which says, I mean, I've been betrayed by some of the closest friendships I've ever had. I have.
Yep.
Except, and this is another celebration this week. Sarah and I have been talking about this because we have known, Sarah and I, betrayal. We've known people who say one thing and then end up doing another. And when you've made decisions in your life around that, it's very, very painful. It's incredibly painful.
Yes.
And I've sat there with Sarah and I said, you know what I'm just awed by? And she says, what? That this keeps working. You and me. We've been at this.
Our friendship?
No, Sarah and I. For 34 years. I don't mean you. I know I'm pointing at you. But I'm talking to Sarah over dinner.
Yes, I get that.
And I said, you know what? Because our lives are joined literally.
Yes.
Financially, every decision we make, even moving.
Yeah.
And now what we're going to do or not do on the new house. I mean, Sarah and I literally have made millions of decisions in the almost 34 years now that we've been married to each other. And this partnership with her works. It has always worked. We don't always get our own way about anything. We always find a way in that space that we can find an usness about what we do. And I tell you what, I came away just going, okay, I know Sarah and I do some things to help make that a reality. But even that is a really gift of God. I mean, what Sarah and I have shared and continue to share, it's a gift.
To treasure it, I mean, I think the thing I've been kind of just parking myself at and meditating on is that sense of what would it be like to have a return to, quote, garden fellowship. I didn't make this environment. This is an environment that was created by God that I get to tend and enjoy. Not labor and toil.
Yep.
Tend and enjoy. And it has all the provisions for me. There's a one thing it doesn't have that I'm not supposed to partake of, which is that I'm going to make myself into. I'm going to do this apart from him. You think of all, there was the tree of life. It wasn't all trees of life.
Right.
There was the tree of life, and there was all these other wonderful things to enjoy that were provided. It was an environment where you were growing, learning, you're doing things, but it didn't have the toil stress element.
You weren't weeding. You weren't beating the weeds out.
Yeah.
That came later. Yeah.
And I think there's a sense of going, I think life and corporate life with God, there's a sense of going like, you know what? I really do think it's an environment that he authors, that I participate in. But if I don't get that straight, it's kind of like Cain. I plowed the field. I sowed. And dang it, you're going to accept my... And it's like, no. I think life with God, that garden fellowship, really works when I go like, you know what? What do I have that has not been given to me? And then I have a stewardship responsibility, but don't really have an ownership.
Hmm.
I think I'm meant to tend and to enjoy, to participate in. But I think when we start to become like, I'm going to put up my property lines. And I'm going to, I think, you know what?
I'm building a fence around my property. So
you're leaving garden reality. And I think it's a challenge.
I have to keep the coyotes out. They're going to eat my dogs.
I know.
They're going to come in my dog door.
We're supposed to tend. There's things for me to do. It isn't just all, it's just flaky land where it's all provided.
Nope.
There's things for me to do. But I do think it's when I recognize these things are in my life as a gift.
That's why my favorite line from the message in Matthew, from the whole of it, Luke 12, Matthew 6, the whole How many of you, can, by worrying, can even add an inch to your height? And if you can't do the little things, why do you sweat the big things? I mean, it's just a mind-blowing, until you know what it is to live love, that passage makes no sense. But the next thing he says to the disciples is this: what I'm trying to get you to do is to relax, to not be so preoccupied with getting that you can't respond to God's giving. And I think that expresses exactly what we talked about in this garden relationship, because most of what I learned in religion was how to get stuff from God, how to get in my life, my prayers, even fasting, all that was designed. I had to get from God what God didn't want to give me. Instead of what Jesus is trying to get the guys to do is, look, don't live in that space. That space of getting, got to get fellowship, got to get something from the Word, got to get something from this or that, I got to. He said it's not the way to live. The way to live is when you wake up today, there's something God's giving to you. Live inside what God's giving. Live inside the relationships that are already there. Don't think about what I don't have. And that's where that stewardship comes in. I participate with God in living what He's given me instead of trying to get what I don't have. The living in what's there. And that's why when my co-writer on the Jake book, Dave Coleman, says that sin really is grabbing for ourselves that which God has not given us.
That is a brilliant definition.
Just shows how when we live in that space of, I'm a participant in the gifts of God today. Now, God doesn't give me on any day everything I want or the way I would like it. And you can live every day frustrated that God didn't do or give you exactly what you thought
only
He should do.
Only because your focus is on not what He has entrusted.
No, it's not what He's giving. It's what our Wayne wants.
Yeah.
But when you live in that space of just, you know what Father gives today, I'm going to live there. That has been, to me, the greatest fruit in my life of transformation that's come from living loved, is that I don't see God as the guy to get stuff from anymore. I see God as a very generous Father who gives. Now, I may not recognize what He's giving, and so I might be frustrated or whatever, but if I can live in that space of ceasing from my own labors, the Hebrews 4 language, and entering into that rest, that's where this relationship thrives.
And when you do that with others, that's where it thrives with others. You can actually experience that. It's not a personal, private, devotional thing.
No, it isn't. It's, man, living inside that space with other people. We just found out there's a group of young couples and singles in the Thousand Oaks, Camarillo area that have just gotten all excited about the Jake book. Read it. They've left their fellowships before they found this book. They're just kind of blown out on organized church. And they want to get together. They want to hang out and see what God does. And so I think some of us get together Saturday, but haven't heard the final word on that yet. I haven't met any of these folks yet. I'm going, this sounds fun to me.
Yeah.
Hang out. See what God does. Don't put any expectation. Oh, let's start a church. Let's start a prototype of the kind of transformative community that we can plant all over the world. See, and immediately you take something God gives and put an agenda to it that will kill it.
Yeah, they weren't told to go reproduce the garden everywhere. I mean, I'm serious. This is new meditations for me where you're just going like, gosh, there's something pretty amazing that you've given us a responsibility to guard and tend. And that means, okay, I need to be involved in this. And there's a vigilance to that. And you're just going like, but I get to live in a reality of, what is my focus? Am I recognizing that God is walking through my day in the cool of my day? Am I fellowshipping in that? Am I recognizing what He's provided? Am I partaking of it? There's a tree of life there. Am I partaking of it? Or am I wanting something else to be apart from Him?
Yeah, and I wonder if when I hear you talking about it, I'm thinking, is that what Jesus, for all that Jesus didn't teach His disciples, He didn't have seminars on anything we have seminars about today.
No.
He didn't teach them how to, you know, run a Sunday morning get-together, how to do worship progression chords that lead people into high holy places of mental transformation or hypnosis, depending on how you want to deal with it. But maybe what He showed them was how to live inside a relationship with the Father who gives, left-handedly with each other. And if He did, I know for me, I don't have a lot of time or enjoyment right now in being in managed relationships that have a huge institutional overlay.
No.
Not interested.
No.
But I'll hang out with anybody who's on a journey and wants to commune and talk and grow together. I wonder if part of what Jesus was doing in that 3 years, I'm going to make you part of something that hopefully will infect you. And that whenever you move outside of it again, you'll go, ooh, I want to get back into that space. I want to, it's like those geese that are flying south for the winter or north now, or maybe they're just parked for the winter. But when they're moving, I slide into this place behind the goose in front of me, and I love it there. I can fly there with great joy. Slip out over here a little bit. Air's more rugged. Got to work harder. Got to fight. Slide back into where I was. I really think that is maybe what Jesus was showing those guys. Here's how to live. Be addicted to this. Go away. And when he's gone now and you begin to experience what New Testament community is, learn the difference between brothers and sisters who live together in a community of love and brothers and sisters who want to manipulate each other to meet self needs that are just not going to be helpful.
Well, we don't have the chapters where Jesus is gone and you have this years down the road, this horrible lament that he's gone.
Yeah.
Because he did what he said. I'm going to prepare a place for you, for where I will be, you will be with me always. And it's like, wait a minute, there's a place there.
Yeah.
There's a place of fellowship and living in grace that he's provided that we can extend to others and really enjoy.
And when you find your way into that, life is so, so good. When you're actually in that space of brothers and sisters who live the way we've just been talking about, fellowship is not work. Community is not work. It's just joy and fun, and a lot of it's very, very natural. But when it begins to fall apart, you don't have to try and save it.
No.
You don't. You can just say, it was what it was. We'll see what God does next.
And God forbid, should you ever try to systematize it? It can't.
You cannot. No, I think that's
it can't.
Bottom line. You can't do it.
It took me a long time to learn that. I think I got so excited about tasting it at moments, and then the thought is, well, how do we mass produce this for others? And you're like, you can't. You cannot.
I get that question all the time. What can we do?
Nothing.
And my answer is always follow him. Follow him and celebrate what he gives you in relationship. And if a group of people do that, it's amazing what they would experience going forward together. But when they stop doing that and try to, okay, we need to put a plan around this, you're going to choke out the very thing you're hoping that God gave you, because now you're going to control it.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.